You're listening to the Boogeyman's Closet podcast. Explicit language and spoilers ahead. You've been warned. And we are back for yet another episode of the Boogeyman's Closet. As always, I am Mike Alvarez.
Boris Killifer.
Susie Hunt.
And we're continuing our Halloween horror movies with episode 67, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark from 2019. It's an hour and 39 minutes, and this is one of those elusive PG-13 horror films that everyone seems to hate so much. This was directed by, I'm probably going to say this wrong, but Andre Overdahl. He's the guy who did Troll Hunter, which I fucking love that movie. And he also did The Autopsy of Jane Doe, which I haven't seen.
Which is a great movie.
Yes,
I was gonna
you need to watch it.
I see you guys are like two more people that have told me how awesome it is. I definitely got to get on that. But let's go around the table. Maurice, we'll start with you this week. You and I saw this in the theater, so I kind of already know what you're thinking, but let us know what your thoughts on this movie are.
It sucked. those stupid PG-13 horror films are,
right.
It was better than I thought it was going to be. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm glad I was able to see it in the theater before we were able to see movies again.
Right.
But, I love this movie. The book scared me as a kid, and watching as an adult, obviously it's not scary, like how it scared you as a kid, but, it had its moments. Oh, very creepy. especially the pale lady.
Oh, yep.
Yeah. Harold looks awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure if I ran into him in a dark corn field, yeah, I'd probably be scared, but I mean, I don't know. It's just, the acting's good. It's like, you get that feel because it takes place in 68. So you get that 60s feel.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought the acting was good. I thought everything looked really cool. The designs, because they had different designs for each character, mm-hmm. The pale lady was CGI, where Harold, somebody played him.
Well, the pale lady was actually a mix. It was a costume with the CGI effects.
Right. That face is CGI though.
Yeah. So fucking creepy.
Yeah. The pale lady probably is the scariest to me, anyways, because of the way she looks, I guess. But
yeah, no, I agree. She terrifies me. But Susie, what about you? What do you think of this?
I really like this movie. I want to say it came out in the summertime, didn't it?
August.
Late August.
So. This was the first time, and it's the closest it's ever come, that there's actually been a movie anytime around my birthday that I've been super excited to see. So this was my birthday movie, mm-hmm. even though it was a few weeks late. I wasn't disappointed. I liked how they wove the different stories together within the context of the outer plot.
Yeah.
Stella, she's fucking kick-ass. She's my girl. I want to be friends with her.
Mm-hmm.
I have things to say about some of the other characters, but I really liked the story. There's a couple things that I question. The CGI, the effects, the monsters, they were all fantastic. I think the jangly man is the one that freaks me out the most.
Mm-hmm.
But oh my God, in the hospital when everything turns red and the pale lady's walking and like the lights are flickering like the red, like white.
Mm-hmm.
That's just so unsettling. It gives me the goosebumps. I also like how it deals with, other themes like Vietnam, the draft, racial and ethnic tensions. It's more than just a movie based on the short, you know, the stories in the books. I really like it.
Yeah. It's more than just a scary story. It's real life scary stories.
That's right.
It's true. Now, this is one of those movies that I could not wait to come out. Like, you know, when I first heard about it, I was excited. And then the more I saw about the production, I was just getting more and more pumped as it went on. My introduction to these books, I was a kid. I was going to Sacred Heart. So it was funny. I was at a Catholic school when I got introduced to these. But you know how every school used to have those little book sales? You know, you'd get the couple of bucks from mom and dad before going to school. And then halfway through the day, you'd go down and buy your books or bookmarks or whatever little weird kitsch they had down there to buy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we can never afford the books. We got the pencils.
See, this, I bought the first Scary Story of Tell in the Dark, the first book. And it gave me fucking nightmares. Like, it scared the shit out of me as a kid. I never read the other two volumes until I was much older. But I'll tell you, the only story that really stuck with me from childhood to adulthood was the story that we see Ruth go through. Pardon me. We see Ruth go through in the movie, The Spiders. Because I'm not terribly arachnophobic anymore, but younger, I was extremely arachnophobic. And the idea of having a boil or something that spider babies are in and then burst out of your skin scared me to death. And of course, my brother and sister didn't help by telling me that that could happen. And I was like, no, it can't. You know, but, you know, so I was pissed scared of that from childhood. But yeah, this film, I fucking love it. It's the perfect example. I've said this before on the show. There are plenty of PG-13 horror films that can scare the hell out of you, because you don't need gore and violence and stuff to be scary. You can tell a good spooky yarn and still scare the crap out of your audience. And just as recently as this week, watching it for this show, I finished it up on Monday morning, because I was off Sunday into Monday. I watched it Monday morning at like 5 a.m. And by the time I was done jotting down my notes, Jess was going off to work, and she was dropping Caleb off at my parents' house, and I'm getting ready for bed, so I'm home alone. And I could not get the image of the fucking pal lady out of my head. I was scared shitless, and I'm laying there in bed, like, creeped the fuck out. So I'm sitting there watching shit on YouTube, like, trying to cheer myself up, because it just got under my skin. And the only other movie that I can think of that really affects me like that is Darkness Falls, and that's another PG-13, where it's just, there's something about the concept that gets under my skin and just creeps me the fuck out. So, yeah, this, I will hold this movie up as an effectively scary film. I agree, the Jangly Man is creepy as shit as well. You know, even the fucking big toe corpse, like, that was fucking spooky too. So, this, I can't recommend this movie enough, especially around this time of year. Like, this is the perfect Halloween film. It's it encapsulates the season. Like, it just, it's not gory and violent. It's just plain scary. I think it's a fantastic movie. So yeah, let's get into the cast, because I agree with both of you. The cast is great. We have Stella Nichols, played by Zoe Margaret Collette. Rubicon, she was in the remake of Annie and Fear the Walking Dead. And then Ramon Morales, played by Michael Garza. He was in The Hunger Games and Wayward Pines. Augie Hildebrandt was played by Gabriel Rush. He was in The Grand Budapest Hotel, Gotham, Better Call Saul, and that movie that just came out, I want to say last year, The Kitchen. I know I talked to you, Reese, that I wanted to see those based on that comic book series, or comic book.
The Dark Horse series, yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to check that out. But then Tommy Milner was played by Austin Abrams. He's in Shameless, Silicon Valley, The Walking Dead, Tragedy Girls, which was up for vote last month, and then We Don't Belong Here. me see. Roy Nichols was played by Dean Norris. This guy is one of our alums. He's been in a shitload of stuff. He was in Police Academy Part 6, City Under Siege, you know, so you know it's quality. Lethal Weapon 2, Gremlins 2, Terminator 2, bunch of sequels. The Lawnmower Man, Married with Children, The X-Files, Starship Troopers, Breaking Bad, Under the Dome, Better Call Saul. Like, this guy is all over the board. Chief Turner, played by Gil Bellows. He was in The Shawshank Redemption. That Snow White movie I've talked about, A Tale of Terror, the one with Sigourney Weaver. He was in that. Smallville, Criminal Minds, that Jennifer Lawrence horror film, The House at the End of the Street.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it was surprisingly good. I thought that it looked dumb as hell from the trailer, and then I really liked it. then that Stephen King Hulu series, 11-22-63, which I've still yet to watch, but the book is fantastic. Then we have Chuck Steinberg, played by Austin Zajor, Fist Fight and Speechless. Ruth Steinberg, played by Natalie Ganshorn. Now, I didn't recognize any of her stuff, but some of the titles include The Night Before Halloween, Make It Pop, and Wet Bum.
Sure.
Wet Bum made me giggle.
I've seen all three.
I'm sure you have. Then we have Lulu, played by Lorraine Toussaint. She was in Hudson Hawk, Dangerous Minds, CSI, ER, Orange is the New Black, Into the Badlands. And then she did voices for the new She-Ra and the Princesses of Power Netflix show. And she did voices for World of Warcraft. Then you have Sarah Bellows, played by Kathleen Pillard. She was in The Strain, Handmaid's Tale. And then she did stunts for The Shape of Water. And then we have Harold, you know, the Harold the Scarecrow and the Pal Lady, played by Mark Stegner or Steger. He was in Men in Black 2, I Am Legend, Paranormal Activity, Holidays, Stand Against Evil, Stranger Things, and Critters, A New Binge, which, if you haven't seen, is fucking hilarious. And then we have the Big Toe Corpse, played by Javier Botet. He was in those, you know, those movies, Wreck, like Recording? He's in 1-4, so he's in all of those. He's in that movie that I
He's a big star, then.
Well, he's been in a... No, he's actually been in a lot of stuff. Have you guys seen that movie Witching and Bitching that was on Netflix?
No.
He's in that. He's in Crimson Peak. He's in The Conjuring Part 2. He's in that god-awful Alien Covenant. He's in It Chapter 1 and 2. He was in Insidious The Last Key. And he's in Slender Man, because, you know, that's such a great movie. He played Slenderman. John Slenderman, M.D. Then we have the Jangly Man, played by Troy James, someone we've seen before in two movies. He was in The Void and the remake of Hellboy. He's also in The Strain, Channel Zero, which, oh, the character he plays in Channel Zero is so fucking creepy. And then The Flash. So, pretty damn good cast in this movie.
Agreed.
I would agree.
But, yeah, so for the basic plot, it takes place on Halloween night, 1968. We have Stella and her two friends, Augie and Chuck, meet a mysterious drifter, Ramon, and uncover the secrets of a sinister notebook filled with stories, and they come to life.
Dun, dun, dun.
Right? We open up with, there's an opening monologue, and it's Stella. She actually repeats this monologue a couple times, but she says...
Let's talk about the great song that's playing at the start of the movie.
Oh, Season of the Witch.
Yes.
Fucking love that song.
And I love the remake of the song at the end by Lana Del Rey.
I love Lana Del Rey.
That really is a good cover.
Yeah.
I think this, I want to say the first time I noticed it was actually this watch, because I don't think I noticed it when we were in the theater. I think we were too busy talking.
Yeah, I noticed it actually the last time I watched it before this time. So.
Yeah, it's a good song. But so we open with a monologue from Stella. She says, stories heal, stories hurt. If we repeat them often enough, they become real. They make us who we are. They have such power. This I learned on the very last autumn of our childhood. And then it says 1968, Mill Valley, Pennsylvania. And we cue up Season of the Witch.
Oh, and I thought you were going to say, quoth the raven, nevermore.
Although that would have worked. So we get kind of a montage of the town, and we see all the different characters doing random stuff. We see Tommy Milner signing up for the military, and then, you know, jumping around and hooting and hollering with his douchebag buddies.
And he's such a fucking asshole.
I wrote Tommy is the real fucking bitch in this movie.
Yeah, he is.
We see Ramon driving into town. We see Stella riding her bike home, and, you know, Chuck and Augie kind of walking along talking. So we're getting just little views of everybody. And then back home, we see Stella bringing her dad some dinner as he's sitting in front of the TV. Kind of, he just looks worn out. Like, the poor guy looks like he works 24/7. And we find out a little later he's working his ass off. And he asked her if she's going to go out with her friends. And she's like, oh, no, I'd rather stay in tonight. And we cut to her lying in her room on bed, looking kind of bummed out. And her whole room is decked out in horror. Like, we see all these, like, old, you know, horror movie posters, like the Universal Monster stuff, the Hammer film stuff. There's, like, books stacked up. You see comic books and magazines and all that. And then a typewriter with a story she's working on. So clearly she's an aspiring author.
Scary stories to tell in the light.
Exactly. Scary stories to tell sometimes. And then we get, we hear a walkie-talkie key up, and it's Stella's friend Chuck, and he's trying to get her to come out with them tonight. And he's like, it's not about candy, it's about the pranks. He's like, get all the eggs and toilet paper you can. And then Augie chimes in on the other walkie-talkie and tries to guilt her by saying it could be their last Halloween together. And then see that... Oh, good.
That's because he's got a crush on her.
Augie's got a crush on every girl.
That's true.
And we see Chuck fishing a turd out of the toilet bowl.
With like a fishing thingy.
Yeah.
That's the actual technical word for it. A fishing thingy.
A fishing thingy. One of them.
A little, like, scoop things. Like when you have to clean your goldfish bowl.
Yeah.
Exactly. That we cut from there to Ramon gassing up his car and looking at a map. And this is where Chief Turner first pulls up next to him and asks him if he knows where he's going. And he just kind of nods and he's like, you know, yeah, I do. And the cop just looks him up and down and drives away.
Doesn't he say he's following the harvest?
Oh, yeah, that's right. He did. He said he's following the harvest. And that's when he looked him up and down and drove off. And then someone just kind of rides by and smacks a flyer into his hand for a Halloween party. He's like, only good tonight. And then we got back to Augie's house and we see his mom is dressing him up as a clown, which, did anyone write down what he actually kept saying he was? He was a specific type of clown.
A Pierrot.
Pierrot. Thank you. Yeah. I guess everyone kept teasing about being a clown. He's like, no, it's a Pierrot.
But it was funny. Cause Mike, you would know the old loosen the crotch part back when you were a kid and your mom was trying to loosen it or fix your costume.
Yeah. Oh, Lord.
Yeah, I don't know if that happens to girls too much, but I know it happened to us guys a lot.
Well, they'd be fussing over like, oh, it's too loose down here.
Yep.
But
also a call back to Big Mouth.
One of the episodes. I haven't watched that in a while. That's a great show.
Yes, it is.
But so she's fussing over him, and then we cut to the douchebags of Tommy and his friends, and we see Harold the Scarecrow for the first time.
Fuck you, Harold.
Yep. And then he starts beating him with a baseball bat, and then they take off and they get in their car and take off.
You don't fuck with Harold.
Oh no, he remembers. And we see Chuck still fishing the turds out of the toilet bowl. And Chuck is fishing Mr. Hanky up out of the toilet, and his sister catches him, and he's like, a little privacy, please, and he kicks the door closed.
He's the one that left it open, though.
I know, right? And it's like, that's not normal activity, buddy. But so we
that's what they did in the 60s for fun, though.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Hanky. But it's not quite Christmas time. But yeah, we cut downstairs to Chuck in a costume where he is a spider, and he's yelling at his mom saying he wanted to be Spider-Man, not
Spider-Man.
Yeah. Which cracked me up. And then he's grabbing his stuff to get going, and his sister starts teasing him about how stupid he looks, and she goes, aren't you a little too old to be trick-or-treating? He goes, aren't you a little ugly to be going on a date? And then he runs outside. It's like that's such a little brother thing to say.
Yep.
Yep.
So we cut to Stella finally agreeing, you know, to go out. She's dressing up like a witch. And then we cut to later that night. And they're walking along the street waiting for Tommy and his friends to come and steal their candy. And they're all ready to set him up. We see Tommy and his buddies driving down with Ruth, which is Chuck's older sister. So that's the date she was going on. Mm-hmm. They're driving along and Chuck is holding out this bag of what seems to be candy. And they speed up. One of his buddies leans out the window and grabs the bag of candy and turns out to be filled with old man undies. That cracked me up. They're like, ew, what's that smell? And he opened it up and goes, it's old man undies. And he just throws it. But so they freak out. They slam on the brakes. And then Chuck, Augie, and Stella start hucking eggs at the car. They throw the car into reverse. Chuck lights the bag of shit that he fished out of the toilet on fire. And he throws it in the window. And then Tommy backs up. He's backing up. You know, he continues to back up. He goes right through a fence while he's slapping at the bag of shit, trying to put it out. And, you know, gets a little shit covered himself. And then he gets out of the car with his baseball bat. And the kids take off running. They're like, oh, fuck. And Tommy and his douchebag friends chase them to the drive-in, which is, of course, showing Night of the Living Dead, because why wouldn't it? It's 1968. And they just kind of stumble upon Ramon's car and get in. And he's like, what the hell?
What a bunch of assholes. Right. Like, you just jump into stranger's car. And then one of them tells him it smells. Like, yeah, how Chuck. Dare you?
Yeah. What are you living in here?
Yeah, because Chuck goes, well, first when Stella jumps in, she's like, be cool. And Chuck and Augie, like, kind of duck down as the douchebags run by. And Ramon's like, what's going on? And that's when Chuck comes up holding a blanket that was in the back seat. And he's sniffing it. He's like, ugh, do you live in here? And then Ramon kind of yells at him, like, you know, get out of my stuff. That's like, I felt bad for the guy. But, yeah, so they're walking around the douchebags are walking around the drive-in looking for him, and they kind of chit-chat in Ramon's car, and Chuck, of course, trying to make small talk, he's like, hey, do you have a switchblade? It's like, oh, wow, there's that little subtle racism thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Hispanic guy, of course he has a switchblade, and, you know, Ramon just ignores him, and then we see Chuck in the back seat with Augie, he's like, you know he's got a switchblade, right? And Augie's like, I know he does. It's like, oh, my God. And then Stella and Ramon start chit-chatting, and they kind of bond over their mutual love for Night of the Living Dead, saying they've both seen it multiple times. And unfortunately, the douchebags find them. So they come up to the car, they start, you know, rattling on the car and telling them to get out. Ramon refuses, you know, he's like, this is my car. And that's when Tommy smacks the baseball bat against the window, and he's like, I don't think you heard me. Everyone needs to get out of your car. And then he says, you too, wetback. And it's like, oh, Tommy, you fucking douche. And that's where Tommy is the real fucking bitch of this movie.
Yep.
Yeah, Ramon gets him back. He says, you smell like shit. Get the hell off my car.
And while this is going on, like, other people are starting to honk and yell, like, hey, down in front. And Tommy taunts Stella. He says, are you going to try to run away too, like your mommy? And that's Ramon tells him. Oh, God.
Now we got some mama jokes. What the hell?
Right. And then some dude comes up and he's like, you need to get the hell out of here. And then the douchebags say, you know, this isn't over. And they walk away. And they go with the guy who was yelling at him. So now we see Stella is really upset at what Tommy said to her. She gets out of the car. She kind of sits on the hood of the car. She's crying, but trying to compose herself. And then Chuck and Augie fill Ramon in a little bit and tell him that her mom left her when she was a little kid. And it's a small town. Everyone would, you know, everyone knows what happened. No one would shut up about it. So basically she can't escape it. Everyone is like, oh, your mom left because of you, which is really fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
But Ramon is really into her because he is checking her out.
Yeah, I was gonna say I got that vibe right away too. But so she ends up composing herself and she says, well, it is Halloween, do you want to see a haunted house? And then we cut to the group arriving at the old Bellows place, and it's all fenced in, big giant mansion, all fenced in, and they find a hole in the fence and sneak in. Augie, of course, doesn't want to go. Chuck starts teasing him about being a chicken. And they split. And Augie's like, just because I don't want to spend Halloween night at a child murderer's house. And that's when they explained that there was there were children murdered in that house or because of that house. And they then go on to say like how it was the Bellows home and they were an old wealthy family who kind of put that town on the map. They ran a paper mill and the town kind of built up around them. So we get up to the front door. It's locked. Ramon is able to pick the lock with Chuck's pen. He had one of those girly pens.
Didn't he call her Luna?
Something or like
Lola?
That.
Lola.
Lola. Yeah. Because he goes, anybody got a pen? And Chuck pulls out Lola and he's like, she's in love with me. And he's like turning it upside down to make her dress come off. And
Augie goes, yeah, she's in love with your hand.
Right. And then Ramon pops the top off and pulls the barrel out. And he just goes, Lola! Like he's all scared. He uses the pen barrel to pick the lock. And so they go inside. And I love this because Chuck looks at Augie and goes, he's so much dreamier than you. And Augie's like, shut up! They get the little bit more of a backstory, and Stella is kind of telling Ramon. She says, the Bellows had a secret, a daughter that they never let leave the house. The myth is that there was something really off about her, and the really scary part is the family erased her from every single portrait, and to this day, nobody has ever found a picture of their daughter, Sarah. And then she goes on to say how they disowned her. And Chuck jumps out and scares Augie and then runs away and Augie chases after him. Stella continues the backstory and tells him that kids would come from all over in hopes to get a peek at strange Sarah. And though they never saw her, they could hear her through the wall. Sarah told them stories, scary stories. Some kids never returned home. Children around town started to die. Poisoned, they said. Everyone knew it was Sarah. But before the mob could get their hands on her, she had already hung herself with her own hair. And as the legend goes, if you come to the Bellows house at dark and ask Sarah to tell you a story, it'll be the last story you ever hear. And then she goes, mwahahaha.
Tell me a story.
Tell me a story. And so they're kind of poking around the house, and Ramon finds a secret door in the kitchen. And they try to go inside, or they go inside the door, and there's another locked door inside there, and Ramon pulls out a switchblade. Stella takes the switchblade and picks the lock. They go inside and find Sarah's room. Now we cut to Chuck. He's upstairs hiding from Augie, and he hides in a closet, and he's just kind of peering out a little bit. And when he looks out, the room that he was just in, which was this big dilapidated falling apart room, is suddenly like a well-lived-in, well-lit room with an old woman sitting on a bed and a dog staring at the closet that Chuck's hiding in. So the woman starts to turn her head toward Chuck, and he freaks out, closes the door, and like starts panting heavily, like, you know, what the fuck is that? And then we hear the footsteps closing in on Chuck. Door opens and it's Augie. Chuck screams and freaks out. He's like, where's the old lady? And Augie's like, what the hell are you talking about? And then they go to find Ramon and Stella. And we cut downstairs to where Ramon and Stella are in Sarah's room. And Stella finds her books. So she finds the scary stories to tell in the dark. And Chuck and Augie come down there. They see that it's the secret room and all that. And I'm going to keep screwing this up. I keep wanting to say Sarah instead of Stella. You got your two S names as your main characters.
Stella!
Stella!
Also, so, I was half expecting a naked dickless Georgie to be in her underground lair, ready to give chase.
There's a callback from a while ago. One of my favorite episodes. Oh, if you guys haven't listened to our Castle Freak episode, do yourself a favor. Go back and check it out.
Yes, but finish this one first.
Yes. So she finds the book and she says, hey, that, you know, this is the book of her stories. And Chuck goes, he's like, I don't remember any story from, or any book from any of the myths. And Augie kind of pops him upside the head. He's like, the book was in every myth. What are you talking about? So he's like, oh, but, Yeah, so Sarah starts, or, see, there I did it again. Stella starts looking through Sarah's book, and Augie says that the stories were supposed to be written in children's blood. And then Chuck, of course, grabs the book. He's like, we need to put this back. We need to keep it here. Stella wants to keep looking at it. And then suddenly the Zippo that they had used, that they were using for light, blows out. So the room goes dark. They freak out. They start to run toward the door, and we see the door slam closed. And of course, it's Tommy and his douchebag buddies locking them in. So we see Chuck's sister Ruth is there. She starts begging Tommy, like, to let them out. She's like, don't lock him in there. What are you doing? And he's like, you know, why do you care? And she goes, because he's my brother. And he's like kind of menacing her. He's like, you know, he's such a dick. But he's standing there holding his baseball bat. And then he finally goes, fine, go ahead, let him out. And she opens the door, and then he boots her in and locks it behind her and says, you were trash anyway. It's like, oh, my God.
He's guilty of domestic abuse. No one's just ever come forward. He is nothing but a douchebag cum bucket load that should have been swallowed.
Yep. You're not wrong.
That's all I got to say about that.
But then
for now.
Right. And Tommy's like, you know, hope you have a good Halloween. And he walks away as they're all locked inside. So he just locked them up in an abandoned house. Like, who the fuck's going to find them? So as, you know, once we cut back inside, we see Ruth kind of stumbles into a spider web and freaks the fuck out. And Augie's trying to help her. He's knocking spiders off of her. Chuck, he's passing by Augie and his sister going to help Ramon try to bust down the door. And he goes, Jesus, Augie, okay, you're such a horn dog. Can you lose your stiffy for a second and help us out of here? And he goes, that's not funny. There's a lady present. And then he corrects him. He goes, a lady's present. Like, he completely forgot Stella was there because Ruth showed up. But one thing I forgot to mention, earlier when the kids are trick-or-treating, Chuck is, like, shoveling candy down his face. And Augie is telling me, he's like, that's disgusting. Do you know how many chemicals are in that? And he's going on and on about what's in the food. And Chuck is going like, oh, is that why it tastes so good? That's actually something that is going to come up repeatedly with Augie. He's like very paranoid about what's in food. So that's going to be a key point for later. And then Ruth obviously freaks out about the spider webs, which is also going to be a key point. So we see Ramon and Chuck pounding on the door. Stella is still in the basement looking through the book and says, Sarah Bellows, tell me a story. And then we see this black ghostly fog kind of creep into the room. And then we see the fog creeps under the door. And then this, like, it kind of forms a ghostly hand and it unlocks the door. Kids are completely confused, but they're like, fuck it. Not going to look a gift horse in the mouth. And they take off. And this is where we see what Tommy and the assholes did to Ramon's car.
Oh,
I felt so bad for Ramon, but they destroyed it. Like, it's the windshield is shattered. The windows are busted out. Tires are flat and they spray painted wetback on the car. So it's like, add a little racist insult to the injury. It's like, I really could not wait for Tommy to get his comeuppance. But yeah. So Chuck says, he's like, this is low, even for Tommy, like, fart in my milk carton and make me drink it kind of low. And Ramon just looks at him and he goes, it was the fifth grade. And Augie goes, no, it was ninth. And he goes, dude. Oh, poor Chuck. He had to drink fart milk.
Oh, but
don't knock it if you've tried it.
Fart milk.
Oh, Lord. So.
Ew. I'm thinking back, like, in the 60s, the milkman, you know, the housewife.
Right.
Brought your delivery of fart milk.
Oh, I'm trying so hard not to mention something that's really inappropriate and gross.
I mean, you could. We're all kind of inappropriate and gross.
The first thing it made me think of is felching.
Oh, my God. That is really gross.
For those of you that don't know, please don't Google it. You'll be sorry you did. Anyway, moving on.
Please. So
Stella offers Ramon a place to stay for the night. And she tells him that, you know, there's a sofa in their basement. And he'll just have to be gone before her father wakes up. So they go back to Stella's house. And she's trying to get blankets and stuff for him. But they're in her room for a minute. And he starts looking through her stories and kind of reading them. And she snatches the book back from him, clearly embarrassed. And he tells her, he's like, you know, if you're serious about being a writer, you're not going to be able to do it here. You got to move to the city. And she tells him she could never leave her dad. So we get the impression that Stella longs to escape this town, but is tethered. And then so she gives him the blankets and kind of sends him off to the basement. And we see him down there getting ready for bed, just looking around. And then we cut back to Stella up in her bedroom, thumbing through Sarah's book. So we see all these different stories, and then we see a bunch of blank pages. Eventually, once she gets to the blank pages, she kind of thumbs back, and she sees a story called Herald, and it wasn't there a second ago. She runs her thumb across the title, and it kind of smears the ink as if the ink is still wet, but it's red ink and looks suspiciously like blood. So now we cut to the cornfield where Tommy is arriving home just outside the cornfield.
Oh, my God.
His mom comes out yelling at him and asking him if he's drunk again.
So like, he goes, Ma, it's like, Halloween.
Right. I'm like,
oh, well, of course you'd be drunk and driving home and you're only a teenager.
Beat that kid's ass. Are you kidding me? I don't care if I was in high school. If I came home like that, my mama would have whooped my ass.
For reals.
She would have had the shoe in one hand just whooping me. But she tells him, she was like, you were supposed to deliver the eggs to the Wolvertons. She's like, and he's like, what, now? She goes, yes, now go. He's like, oh, son of a bitch. Just mumbles. Go on now,
get.
Go on, get. So he goes and he stumbles into the barn to get the eggs. And we cut to Harold's point of view. We see the scarecrow and we see Tommy going into the barn. So we see Harold watching Tommy, and then we see the ghostly fog, that black fog again, appear around the barn and kind of closing in on the doorway. And we cut to Tommy walking through the cornfield. I don't know why he went walking through the corn with the basket of eggs. Like, if he was supposed to go to, what's that?
Plot.
Yeah, that's true. Movie got a movie. Right. I was just like, why isn't he supposed to go deliver them somewhere? Like, do they live in the cornfield? Like, what's going on?
Maybe they're the children of the corn people.
The Wolvertons, they live behind the rose. They're he who walks behind the rose.
Yeah.
There we go, that makes sense. So he passes Harold, and he goes, eat shit, Harold, and he punches him. And then starts to walk around, and he somehow circles back through the corn like he's lost, and he comes up on Harold again.
It's because he's that drunk.
Yep, well that
he's is. He's just walking around in circles.
He's like, where are these damn Wolvertons? I don't remember where they live.
Yoo-hoo!
He who walks behind the rose. I'm looking
Holly
for...
Holly oxen free!
And so he circles back around and sees Harold again. And he's like, what the hell? So starts walking away. And this time when he circles back around, there's no Harold on the post. The post is empty. Starts walking through the corn again, and he hears something behind him and looks over his shoulder and sees something like run into the corn. So now he looks pretty creeped out and starts moving pretty fast, turns and looks ahead of him. And there's Harold standing in the pathway, falls back terrified. And then we see Harold kind of spring to life. That was creepy. The way he kind of like cricked and creaked to like snap to life.
That creeped me out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Tommy's freaking out. He gets up and tries to run away. He starts running, looking back, and Harold is just stomping, you know, behind him, coming after him. Tommy trips over a pitchfork, picks it up, turns, stabs Harold with it. Harold just grabs the pitchfork out of his hands, pulls it out of himself. Tommy goes to run. He stabs that little bitch right in the back. And you see that the pitchfork came all the way through him. But I love the effect here. It comes out of him, but we don't see any blood. When he pulls the pitchfork back out, we just see bits of hay sticking out of the holes. And then Tommy starts staggering forward as he's coughing and hacking, screaming for his mom to help him. And we see... he's like, Mama!
What a little bitch.
Who's the bitch now? You cock knocker.
If you guys couldn't tell, we all hated Tommy. But as he's stumbling, he's hacking and retching, and he's pulling hay out of his mouth. There's just like that made me uncomfortable. Just the idea of like choking on straw. It's like, ugh.
And yeah, there's no coming back from that.
No. It starts coming out of his ears and, like, just poking out. Now, you have to imagine it's coming out of every orifice at that point.
You know, every orifice. It's like a backwards catheter, I bet.
Oh, God.
Oh.
That's horrifying. And then we see he falls down in, like, looking down at the camera. So we're, like, we're looking up at him from a worm's eye point of view. And he pukes straw at the screen. And then the screen goes black. So we cut to the next morning with Ramon at the shop trying to get his car repaired. And Chief Turner shows up and tells him, you know, he goes, hey, you haven't seen, it's like the Milner boy, Tommy. I heard that you had a altercation with him at the drive-in. He goes, kid's been missing since last night. And Ramon's like, no, I haven't seen him. He's like, did he do this to your car? And Ramon wouldn't say anything. And he tells Ramon that he should stick around for a few days. He's like, I don't want you going anywhere. So clearly Turner suspects something happened with Ramon.
Some tomfoolery. Some Tommy foolery.
Dun, dun, dun. And then we cut to Stella, Augie, and Chuck at school in, like, I'm assuming, like, drama club, because they were in, like, the theater. And they're all, she's telling them about, you know, Tommy never showing back up to school and telling about the story. Meanwhile, Augie is, Chuck is stuffing more food in his face, and Augie is complaining again, like, do you know what's even in that? So he's definitely obsessive about that. But, you know, she goes on to explain, like, Tommy's missing. And Augie just writes it off, basically saying, you know, everyone knows that he was jonesing to go kill some commies. He just left school. You know, basically he quit school and went off to war. And he's like, I say good riddance. And Chuck, on the other hand, thinks there's something to it and is looking through the story and explains the craziness about what, you know, the old lady and the dog, like what he saw. Augie, of course, writes it off, says that they're just being spooked by an old ghost story and he doesn't want to hear any more about it. So now we cut to Ramon and Stella heading to Tommy's farm. They see the cops are there. Ramon doesn't want to go any further because he doesn't want to get mixed up with the police, which, so now at this point, we know something's going on with Ramon. Stella needs to know what happened. They cut through the cornfield and they see the new Harold, the Scarecrow, which is wearing Tommy's clothes. So Tommy got turned into Harold. But, good. Right. And she points out,
here's the question. Where is the real Harold?
He's hanging out in the corn somewhere.
Maybe he turned back into a real boy now that someone else has picked up the curse.
Right.
Oh, okay. Makes sense.
I mean, I'm just hypothesizing.
He took the eggs to the Wolvertons.
Yeah. They probably got like 100 kids. They were going to go hungry.
Well, it is. I mean, they are the children of the corn, so.
Right.
So she points out that the Scarecrow is wearing exactly what Tommy had on the night before, and Ramon tells her it's nothing more than a Scarecrow. So now we cut back to school, which I found this funny. It made me think of prom night. So we were at school, then we cut to Milner's place, and then we're back at school. Like, how long of a lunch period did these kids have?
Or how close is everything in this damn town?
Right. Is it like one of those towns where there's just one stoplight? And that's it.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Lisa, it's a small town.
That's true. Everything's real close.
There's probably inbreeding going on.
Well, that would explain Tommy.
Well, that he may did, explain something later.
He did look a little inbred.
That's true.
Yes, it will explain something later.
So we cut back to Sarah or Stella at school taking Sarah's book out of her locker. And then we cut to her arriving at the Bellows house, and she puts the book back on the shelf and, you know, basically says that she's sorry that she took the book, and then she goes back home. Now, she catches her dad on his way out, and she said, you picked up another shift? And he's like, I can't say no. So we kind of get the impression that, like, they're not doing so well financially, and he's got to work as much as he possibly can. And he tells her there's food in the fridge. And then she asks him if he's always worked that much, even when mom was there. And he kind of skirts the question and tells her that he goes, did you hear about the Milner boy that's missing? He's like, I want you to please come straight home after school for the rest of the week. So he's, you know, worried about his kid, understandably so. And I just wrote, I feel so bad for Stella's dad. Like, this whole movie, this guy just seems like, you know, overworked and just worrying about his kid.
See, I took the whole rushing off to work as it's difficult for him to be home because there's all the memories of her mother.
I mean, that's possible too. I just kind of took the idea as like, he's a working, you know, working single father, you know, just, I mean, that's true. It was sick. I'm thinking of today's standards.
I'm with Susie. I thought that he just does it so it takes his mind off everything.
That's, you guys are probably right. You know, because again, 1960s, I'm sure you probably could have had a one income household. I'm thinking of like today where it's like, oh my God, imagine trying to be a single parent. Right. You know, you'd be working all the time, you know. But so he, you know, he takes off. And we cut to Ruth back home trying to put on makeup over a giant pimple looking thing. And Chuck comes in eating a banana and goes, "You got enough zip paint on there?" She goes, "It's a spider bite, you butt pimple." And she slams the door. And then we just hear him go, "Oh, damn, my banana." Like, I don't know
why. That was really random and funny.
Right. I don't know why it made me laugh so hard, but like I ended up rewinding it twice. So we see, we cut to Stella making dinner and Ramon shows up. And she starts telling him about how she can't stop thinking about what happened to Tommy. And she thinks that there's some kind of connection to the story. And she turns to see Ramon reading through Sarah's book. And she goes, "Wait, I returned that. How did you get that?" And he's like, "It was just here on your shelf." She's like, no, I brought that back to the house. So he's like, "But you couldn't have because it's right here." So they start thumbing through it. And we see a new story being written right before their eyes and written in blood. It's the big toe. She drops the book. Her and Ramon freak out. They try to stop it. She starts ripping pages out, and every page she rips out, it appears on the next page. So you can't stop the story from being written. And then Ramon starts reading it over her shoulder. It's about a woman finding a big toe in her garden and says how plump and juicy it looks, so she decided to put it in her stew. Which I'm just like, that is so fucked up.
Plump and juicy, just no. Ugh. Oh, I'm getting shivers just talking about it now. Also, in case any of the listeners don't know, I hate feet.
Yep.
Like, if I could, I would cut off my feet and walk around on little peg legs like a pirate.
Oh, my God. It was funny because the whole time this scene was happening, I was thinking of you, Susie. I'm like, oh, Susie, really don't like this scene, I bet.
Oh, my God. It was. Oh, keep going. Keep going. Let's just, I got to power through it.
So there's like, he's continuing to read, and Stella sees the name August and realizes that Sarah is after Augie. So she grabs the radio and tries to reach him. Augie is on the phone with his mom, who took off for the weekend with her boyfriend, and he's complaining that there's no food in the house. He's like, "The least you could have done was go grocery shopping before you left." And he opens the fridge and finds this big pot of stew. And he says, "Well, whatever, I'm eating this stew." And she goes, "What stew?" And he's like, "The one in the fridge." She has no idea what he's talking about. He's like, "Well, somebody put it here." And he hangs up the phone. He finally answers Stella while he's taking a big spoonful of toe stew. And she tells him that tells him about the next story and tells him not to eat anything. And he's like, "Oh, ha ha, you're fucking with me." You know, and Ramon grabs the radio and starts reading part of the story to him, telling him that there's a corpse looking for its big toe, a big toe that's in the stew. And Augie tells me, he's like, "Wait, I know this story. My dad used to tell it to me as a kid, and it freaked me out." So they're reading more of the story to him and saying that a voice called out, "Who took my big toe?" Augie tells them he's all alone, no voice, just them. We cut to the stew pot, and we see the toe surface. And then Augie, of course, takes a big old spoonful with the toe. Doesn't see the toe.
Yum, yum, yum.
I'm literally getting goosebumps. Like, I'm that uncomfortable with this part.
It's so toe nasty.
Soup is so delicious.
Oh, I even had the nail on it.
He pops it in his mouth and crunches down and then stops and slowly pulls the toe back out of his mouth, freaks the fuck out, knocks the stew pot over. We see there's eyeballs and other weird assorted grossness in there. And he turns and pukes. Then he hears something coming. He starts panicking and asks Stella what happens next. And then he hears the creepy old voice, "Who took my toe?" And the lights flicker and go out. Augie runs and hides in his room. Stella and Ramon leave the house saying that he lives close by, and they take off. Then we see Augie hiding in the room. We see a zombie slowly creeping down the hallway, asking who took my big toe. Now, the fucking zombie is creepy as shit. Like, it's so spooky looking. And then Augie tries to escape out the window, but can't get it open, so he hides under his bed. We see the door slowly creak open. He shuts his eyes tight, eventually opens his eyes again, and sees nothing in the room. There's nothing there. So he looks around, slowly slides out from underneath the bed, looks up, like kind of sits up and peeks onto the bed to make sure nothing is up there, realizes, okay, he's safe. There's nothing there. And suddenly he gets yanked back under the bed, and we see the corpse under there with him, and it shrieks. He screams, and then he starts getting dragged into the darkness. We see him like start clawing at the floor.
Oh,
damn, nails on the floor. I hate that.
Yep. And I mean, he dragged like tracks into it. So like, you just see nail tracks as he's being pulled into the nothing. Like there was nowhere to go, but he was pulled into somewhere.
The upside down.
Right. That's very much what it reminded me of. So bye-bye, Augie. He's completely gone. And then Stella and Ramon show up. They can't find Augie. They check under the bed, and they see the nail claw marks leading to the wall. So they don't know where he went.
He done going to hell.
Yeah. He done went to the upside down. Which would make sense, considering that dude who played the toe corpse also played the creature in Stranger Things.
The Demogorgon?
Yep. So, pretty cool. But then we cut to the town searching for Tommy. We see Stella and Ramon at the drive-in. Like, we do, like, the little interstitial of them searching for Tommy. And then we cut to Stella and Ramon at the drive-in. Stella's blaming herself for this. She tells them how she caused every single bad thing in her life to happen. Her mom leaving, and now Augie. Ramon tells her that's not true. We see Chuck and Ruth show up, and Stella tells them about Augie. Chuck looks concerned, Ruth looks confused, and thinks it's nothing but a joke. Chuck starts to freak out, realizing, you know, like, Augie's gone, Tommy's gone, like, what's going on with this book? And then Stella tells him that she doesn't know how to stop it, that a new story appears every night. And she says, you don't read the book reads you. She says, I'm afraid we woke something up, and this is going to happen to all of us. Ruth freaks out, tells him that there's no way this can be real. Chuck wants to go to the police to find Augie, but they can't go to the police because Ramon thinks that he'll be blamed for Tommy. And then Ruth is like, you know, I don't believe this. You know, Stella, this isn't a funny joke. And she gets in her car and takes off, leaving the three of them there.
Because she's like, I have the musical tonight. Bye, bitches.
Chekhov's musical.
Yeah.
So they decide they're going to try to burn the book. They throw it in like a hobo fire and try to burn it. And yeah, it don't burn. And I love it because when they dump out the ashes of the hobo fire and the book tumbles out, Chuck just starts freaking out in the background, stomping on it, going, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you. This is why I don't read books. So they decide they're going to go do research on Sarah Bellows. We cut to the library, and Chuck is shoving French fries in his face and drops a big old gob of Chekhov's ketchup on his shirt. And so they find an article about the Bellows family firing their housekeeper after Sarah hung herself. The Bellows blamed Sylvie Baptiste. Am I saying that right? Baptiste?
Yeah, Baptiste.
Baptiste.
And her daughter Lulu. And they were thought to be responsible for teaching Sarah black magic.
Lulu? Was it Lulu? Lulu and the voodoo?
So Ramon finds info suggesting that all of the Bellows just disappeared 1 year after Sarah hung herself. He's like, there's no more information about them after she hung herself. And Stella recognizes one of the names. She recognizes Stella's father, Diodat. She looks in Sarah's book and finds the name Diodat. And then she asks Ramon for another name, and he says Ephraim. She finds that name in the story as well. So they didn't leave town. They each have a story. Stella thumbs through the book and lands on a blank page where a new story is being written. The Red Spot. Both Stella and Ramon look at Chuck. He looks down and sees the red spot on his shirt and freaks the fuck out. And then they start realizing that the story isn't about Chuck. It's about Ruth. We cut to the school play. Ruth is in the makeup room trying to cover up her giant spider bite while the other girls giggle and titter behind her back. And then the one's like, oh, honey, you got to do something about that. I was like, man, these girls are bitches. And
hey, that's high school. Nothing changed.
That's true. So Ruth runs to the bathroom and oh, this part freaked me out so bad. So she's poking and prodding at the lump on her face. We see the black fog start to creep into the room. We cut to the kids running to school. They rush in. They go into the wrong bathroom. And I wrote, they catch a gaggle of girls doing Lord knows what in the dark bathroom.
I wrote that too. What were those girls doing in the bathroom? So I have a lot of things that gross me out. I don't know if, well, I don't care if it's normal or not. It is what it is. But I used to have a boss who was obsessed with Dr. Pimple Popper.
Oh, yeah.
And she used to sit and watch videos on YouTube at work. Ugh. And I'm so disgusted by that. And that's what this scene reminded me of. Like, I thought I was going to die watching it. Not really, I'm being dramatic, but.
But that was really fucking gross.
Ugh. Because you're just waiting for it to, like, keep going.
Well, yeah, so I want to know what those girls were doing, because there was no smoke, so it wasn't like they were smoking in the girls' room. It was just like, what y'all doing in there? You doing
smack? I mean, maybe they were experimenting with other things.
Lord only knows. But,
Summoning the devil. We don't know.
Scat play?
Maybe.
So we cut back to Ruth poking and prodding or I'm sorry, Stella, Ramon and Chuck realize that it must be the upstairs bathroom. So they go running upstairs. And as Ruth is poking and prodding, we see something move under the surface of her skin. And then something that looks like a black hair pokes out of her flesh. She touches it and it starts to move. We realize it's leg. And then the hole gets wider and spiders start pouring out of her fucking face. And the lights go out. That is like, oh, I think I would just have a heart attack and die at that point. Like, I don't know if I could survive that. It's so fucking scary. But the kids come running in. They find spiders everywhere. Ruth is freaking out in the corner, slapping at all the spiders. They try to help her. Chuck grabs a mop bucket, dumps it on her, washes some of the spiders away. And Stella sees the shadow of Sarah Bellows, like, kind of creep back into the darkness, and then the lights turn back on. Ruth is a complete gibbering mess at that point, as you would be. And then we cut to her being taken away to the hospital while all the kids watch, like, you know, this poor girl just got covered in spiders that came out of her face. It's like, ugh.
Face spiders.
That girl got face spiders. So we cut to the next
day. Got it from you, Tommy.
He had that many diseases. He done gave her face spiders.
Yeah, he probably did. Ugh. He probably had to pay for them all, too.
Oh, so nasty.
Oh, I hate him. I'm glad he's a scarecrow.
Then he had this part. Oh, good.
I was going to say, this part's kind of confusing. Because Chuck is talking to Stella, and he's like, my sister's gone, and we're next. But she didn't die. I didn't understand that part.
Well, I think he meant, because she went, like, she was, they mentioned this a little later, that she's in a mental hospital. So, like,
yeah, but that's when she was getting put into the ambulance.
Yeah, they took her to the loony bin, because she was freaking the fuck out in the girls' bathroom.
She was a gibbering mess.
Oh, I don't understand that part up until this day. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I think
the way he says it is like she died. My sister's gone, and we're next.
I think he meant like, you know, mentally she's gone. His sister's not there anymore.
Maybe, but
yeah, it's a movie got a movie.
All right.
Dawn, thank you for giving us that quote.
Please don't sue us.
Right. So we cut to the next day and we see Chuck, Ramon, and Stella looking through a phone book, looking for Lulu Baptiste. They find her, they find her address and head off to her house. Now Chuck is, he starts telling them about a reoccurring nightmare that he has about a red room and a fat pale lady who keeps whispering to him that this is an evil place and run while you still can. And then he says he's afraid that Sarah is going to use it against him. Lulu's daughter answers the door, shows them in, and the three come in and try to talk to Lulu, but she doesn't respond. Stella finds a music box. Shit, I forgot to mention this earlier. There's a music. There was a music box in Sarah's room that plays. What was the name of the song? The Hirsch song.
The Hirsch song.
I thought it was "The Worms Go In, The Worms Go Out." Is that the Hirsch song?
Yeah,
it's the Hirsch song. Yeah.
And I forgot to mention that earlier. That when they were down in the in Sarah's room, they find the music box. So, Stella finds the same music box in Lulu's house, turns a, you know, winds it up and starts to play. And Lulu speaks up and says, "You may be next." And she goes, "Why do you say that?" And she goes, "Why, that's the song, girl." And she goes, "Don't ever laugh." And she starts kind of sing song. "Don't ever laugh as a hearse goes by. You may be the next to die." And she says, Sarah loved that song. And then they tell her about, they tell her that they have Sarah's book and she asks to see it. She clutches it to her and starts kind of like feeling the book and says that she gave that book to Sarah. She felt so sorry for her living down there all alone. They ask her if her mother if her mother taught Sarah black magic, and she tells them there's no magic, only rage. And that's when we get the line that she says, "Stories hurt, stories heal." She goes, "You shouldn't have taken the book. You've made her angry." And then she starts singing again, "The worms crawl in, the worms crawl out." And Lulu's daughter comes in and tells him, "Sometimes she gets this way. You guys need to leave and come back, you know, a different day."
Because her ears perk up when she hears him say, "Did your mother teach her anything like black magic?"
Right. It's like, well, that's a little fucked up. Don't you think?
She's like, "What are these white kids in here for? What are they doing?"
Exactly.
Causing trouble.
So Stella kind of protests. She's like, "No, I need to know." And the daughter tells him that her mother told the authorities everything that she could back when that poor girl hung herself at the hospital. And they stopped and realized, like, wait a second, we thought she hung herself in the house. And then they, you know, they talk as they're leaving, saying, like, hospitals have records. We need to go and look into this. So montage of them on the bus heading off to the hospital. And we see Chuck kind of asleep in the backseat of the bus, clearly having a nightmare. So he's probably
and
dreaming.
Stella puts her head on Ramon's shoulder, little budding romance.
Yep. And so they arrive at the hospital, and I love the scene because they go up to the nurse and ask if they can see the former or see the patient or see the records of former patients. And she's like, "We don't give out patient records to random people." And they're like, "Oh no, the person died over 100 years ago, so it's like totally cool. It's for a school project." And then there's some doctor, you know, pipes up in the background. He's like, "Oh yeah, I think they keep the records in the red room." And that's when Chuck perks up at the mention of the red room. And the nurse gives them paperwork to fill out, and she says it takes 6 weeks processing time. So as the they're walking away with the clipboard and the paperwork, a bunch of doctors and people are walking out of one of the hallway or one of the doors, and they wait for the doctors to pass by. The nurse isn't looking, and they sneak in. Without permission. And they just chuck out the paperwork. They're like, "Fuck this." Chuck tries arguing with them, telling him he doesn't want to go to the red room.
"I don't want to go. I want to go back to the blue room."
So I was just thinking, cube.
Yep. I would love to get that on here.
Oh, yeah, me too. That's a great one. Not the sequel, but the original.
No, yeah, the original.
But so they tell him they'll go on without him, but he's got to not get caught. So Chuck is like, "Fuck," and kind of like sneaks off to the elevator, takes it all the way up to the top floor, and ends up going out onto the roof. The door closes behind him, and now he can't get back in. So he's looking at there's like a bunch of employees, like orderlies, standing out on the roof having a cigarette and talking. So he's like, "Okay, I'm just going to walk by," and slowly walks by him like he has, you know, like he has every right to be up there. And the one orderly
talking about
noticed,
George Foreman.
What's, yeah.
Talking about Frasier.
That's what it was. I was going to say, I didn't write it down, but I read that in the trivia. And so he's walking by him. The one guy is like, "Hey, what are you doing up here?" And he keeps on walking. Then he opens the door at the other end of the roof and takes off, and they go chasing after him. And then we see Stella and Ramon find the records room, and they find Sarah's files along with like a wax cylinder. So they're talking about how they read in the file that she was suffering from, I'm probably going to say this wrong, is it acromasia albinism?
I don't know. I didn't write it down.
Sounds about right to me.
She was albino.
She was like powder.
Right. And so that's what, and then Stella says they put her in the basement because she was different. And then they read that her brother Ephraim was her doctor, and he ordered electroshock therapy and isolation therapy. And they're kind of like shocked that her own brother would do that to her. So they go and find a player, like an old Victrola for the wax cylinder. And we cut to Chuck running and hiding from the orderlies as they're chasing behind him. And then cut back to Stella and Ramon listening to the cylinder. And it says, "You're going to tell the truth now, aren't you, Sarah?" And she says, "I didn't hurt the children. I didn't." And then she begs him. She says, "Ephraim, please." And he said, "That isn't the truth, is it?" And she goes, "I didn't do it. I didn't hurt." And then we hear the electroshock sounds and her screaming. And he says, "Tell the truth, Sarah." She says, "But I'm your sister." And he goes, "You poisoned those children." She goes, no, I tried. I tried to save them, but nobody listened. He goes, "I didn't want to hurt them, but you wouldn't let me out." And he goes, "Sarah." And then we hear more electric shocks and her screaming. And he says, "Tell the truth." She says, "It was the water." And he goes, "We went over this, Sarah. There's nothing wrong with the water. That's why you're here." She says, "The mill. It was the mercury from the mill. You poisoned the water." And before she could finish the sentence, more electric shocks. And then he says, "Sarah, are you still here?" Suddenly her voice changes. And she says, "I'll tell you. I'll tell you what you want to hear." And he said, "And what's that?" And then she said, "Charlie had a dream of a red room." And he goes, "Charlie? Charlie who?" And she says, "In this dream, a woman with a pale face, black eyes, and long black hair slipped silently into the room." And Stella realizes, holy shit, she's talking about Chuck, digs out the book, looks, we see a story being written, and then we cut to Chuck running through the halls, and a whisper, and then we hear Sarah saying, "And a whispering voice says," and it says she leaned over and whispered, "This place is evil. Run while you still can." An alarm kicks on, the lights go red, and then Chuck is left in a red room, like a red hallway. And we see the black shadow creeping down the hall, and the pale lady appears. This fucking thing is nightmare fuel, man.
Mm-hmm.
It's so creepy. Chuck sees her at the end of a long hallway coming toward him. He runs in the opposite direction, but then turns and sees her coming from that direction. So he runs back to the other hall. She's still coming down that hallway. Turns, goes down another hall. She's coming from that hallway. Every direction he turns, she's at the end of the hall getting closer. So we cut back and forth. He's trying every door. Everything is locked. She's getting closer and closer and closer. She's almost on top of him. He's freaking out. Then she just grabs him and fucking absorbs him into her body. Like, that was spooky as shit.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, oh, I do not like this. It's very much like The Blob.
You know what, though? You know I'm always one to point out idiocy. He should have listened to Stella and Ramon.
What do you mean?
They told him not to get caught, so he goes off gallivanting through the whole damn hospital. He should have just, like, gone and, like, hid in the toilet. Like, he was taking a massive dump after eating toast stew.
Oh, man. Oh, toast stew. Gross. So, she absorbs him, and he's gone. And then we just see his little pen left behind. And Stella and Ramon are running through the hospital looking for him. They come upon that room. And they find Lola, the pen, laying on the floor. And then the employees and the pissed off nurse kind of surround him. So we cut to Stella and Ramon at the police station. She's calling her dad and tells him that she's afraid she's going to die. And she tries to explain that if she goes missing, he won't be able to find her. And to just know that she didn't leave him, that she wouldn't do that to him. The dad is clearly confused and scared. He's telling her it's not her fault. Her mom left, and he's apologizing to her and says that, you know, he knows that everyone said it was because of her, but that's not true. And then she goes on, or he says, "It wasn't your fault, Stella." He says, "Your mother felt trapped here." He goes, "I know it doesn't make any sense. I can't make sense of it, but she just felt trapped. She had to leave." And then we see Stella at the police station. You know, we cut back to her, and Chief Turner is approaching, telling her it's time to get off the phone. And she tells him goodbye. And the cop wants to know, like, you know, okay, so what's going on with you? Like, why are you tied up with this guy, this Ramon guy? You know, is your dad coming here to pick you up? What's going on? She tells him that she's not going anywhere. And then Ramon says, what about my phone call? And he says, the rules don't apply to draft dodgers. And he tells him that one way or another, he's going to do his duty to this country. And he locks Ramon up for the night.
And he says, Ramon Morales. Because yeah. He originally tells the cop his last name is Rodriguez.
That's right. I forgot to mention. That was back in the mechanic.
Yeah. After douchebag jacked up his car.
Douchebag Magooch. He's a scarecrow now. But so, you know, Stella's refusing to basically leave. And the officer's like, all right, fine. Maybe, you know, he's like, maybe a night in the cell will you know, wise you up. I forgot how he says it, but, you know, you'll wise up after a night in the cell. So he puts the both of them in the two, you know, little, like, basically like the drunk tank, the two little cells in the office.
Where they can still hold hands, though, or at least yes. Fingertips.
Yeah, they were right next door to each other. And
how cute.
But he asks them about the missing kids. He wants to know everything that they know. Of course, you know, she says, we already told you. And he's like, oh, yeah, Sarabello's book. Yeah, okay, that's not true. Like, he doesn't believe him at all. So Stella tells him that they saved Ruth from being killed. And he tells him that they didn't save her. She's in a mental hospital for life. And she tries to tell him again that, you know, it's all true. It's the book. He doesn't believe it. And there they are, locked in the cell for the night. And Ramon apologizes to her, telling her about, like, you know, I'm sorry I didn't tell you about the draft. And goes on to tell her that 2 months ago they shipped his brother back from Vietnam in pieces. And he says that he's afraid if the book reads him, he's afraid of what it's going to say. And then we see the cop sitting down at his desk. He starts looking through the book, and we see a new title that says Me Tai Dodie Walker. He runs his thumb across the ink, and it smears, and the lights flicker. Then the cop comes in and asks Stella and Ramon, he's like, who came up with all this sick stuff? And he goes, was this you, Stella? And she goes, no, it wasn't me. I didn't write the stories. And the lights go out completely. We hear the dog growling and whining out in the police station. Cop goes out there, sees the dog staring at the fireplace. And Stella realizes something's going on and starts asking him if there was a new story, you know, and saying, what does it say? Something starts coming down the chimney, and the cop tells her, or she goes, who's the name in the book? Like, what's the name in the book? And he says, it's Ramon. And then Ramon figures out what's coming. He says a campfire story when he was a kid that used to scare the hell out of him, the jangly man. And then we see a head fall down the chimney and roll out into the room. And it opens his eyes and says, Me Tai Dodie Walker. And the cop goes, are you shitting me? And just starts shooting it. That is the only response you could have in that situation.
Right.
He just fucking shot the shit out of it. And then all these other pieces start falling down the chimney. You see arms flopping down, legs, and eventually a torso. And they slowly start combining. And we see, like, the cop is standing there watching all this. And then the jangly man stands up to his full height, grabs Chief Turner's neck, and just snaps it. So bye-bye, cop. We cut back to Stella and Ramon in the cells, and we hear the jangly man killing the cop out there. And then we just see his corpse come flying into the room.
Very Friday the 13th.
Right. That's very true. Jason always hucking them bodies.
That's how he stays swole.
He's tossing bodies as if they were cabers.
Yeah, well, he listens to shit. I can't think of what band it is, and it's probably not a bad thing. The Body's Hitting the Floor band.
Oh.
Drowning Pool.
Drowning Pool.
Fucking hate them.
My favorite band of all time.
I don't know if we can be friends anymore.
Well, I mean, I stick with you, and you're a Bills fan, so.
That's true. I don't. Let's Stop just keep fire. Going. This was. That was a dumpster fire Tuesday night, is what that was. Anyway,
let's not digress.
Yes.
So, So the we see the jangly man come crawling in like all backwards and contorted. And, you know, they start freaking out. He comes and he says Ramon, and he starts going straight for Ramon's cell. And then Ramon backs against the wall. The jangly man squeezes his head between the bars and starts yelling at him that he's a coward. Stella starts grabbing the keys off of Officer or Chief Turner's belt and unlocks.
Say Officer Deadman.
Well, that too, Officer McDeadpants. She grabs the keys, unlocks the door as the jangly man is squeezing his body further and further between the bars. At this point, he's like halfway through. She unlocks Ramon's cell, and he comes running out. The jangly man's just stuck between the bars, like, oh, son of a bitch. And so they take off. They grab the keys to the cop car and, you know, grab the book, take off running. Jangly man is trying to get out and give chase. And then when they're outside, you know, it's the third act storm, as always. We got the storm going. They run outside. They get to the car, and Ramon tells her, you have to go back, you know, return the book, tell the truth. Goes, he's going to come after me no matter what. I'll lead him in the other direction. So she runs off to the Bellows house. He gets in the cop car. We see the jangly man come creepily prancing out of the police station. I hate the way he moves. Like, it's so fucking eerie.
Mm-hmm.
But Ramon gets in the car and takes off. And the jangly man just flings himself on top of the car and starts pummeling the windows, like slapping and cracking at him. Ramon hits the brakes, sends the jangly man flying forward. He grabs onto the hood of the car, and he's yelling, me tie Doty Walker, and then he's saying, coward, coward. And Ramon slams the jangly man into a parked truck and pins him between the car and the truck. Gets out of the car, starts running toward the Bellows house. The jangly man can't move, so he falls apart and then reforms. So
I wish that could happen in real life, like to me. Like, you have a rough... Yeah, you have a rough night, just take yourself apart, put it back together.
Right. So Stella arrives back at the house and tries to contact Sarah. Stella hears a music box playing softly, and then suddenly the house looks new, and Stella no longer has the book in her hands. Then we cut back to the rundown house, and the book lies open at the foot of the stairs. Ramon comes in, finds the book, and a new story is being written, The Haunted House. We see the jangly man coming after Ramon. Ramon runs to hide. Then we cut back to Stella hearing the Bellows family talk about how Sarah is out of her room again and they need to find her. Stella hides, and then back in the old house, we see the jangly man searching for Ramon, like running all around the house. We see Stella run upstairs and hide. Ramon also is upstairs hiding, and it's like, every time they pass each other in the two different dimensions, they can kind of feel one another is there, but it's like almost like a ghostly presence. So Stella is in the room with the old blind woman, who turns and looks, like the blind woman and the dog turns and looks and screams that she's there, giving away her location.
She and goes, we just, I know you're there.
And she's like, she's here. And Stella turns. We only get a brief glimpse. She looks in the mirror and looks shocked and then runs, and we see this like long flowing white hair running away from the mirror. So Stella looks like Sarah. And then we cut back to the jangly man, and he's cornering Ramon. Like, so Ramon is hiding and, you know, behind a door, and the jangly man is pounding on the door. Then we cut to Stella running into the dining room and hides under the table with the help of Lulu. Lulu takes the family away, saying like, oh, she's not in here. And then we cut back to Ramon finding Stella's glasses in like a dusty, scuffed up bit of rubble. And then we cut back to Stella's story. She's under the table. They find her. They yank her away by her hair, and her glasses come flopping off. So that's how Ramon found him. They shove her back in the basement room and tell her, you don't deserve the lights. And they turn off the lights and leave her in the darkness. So Stella's down there, darkness all around her. She's crying. She hears something behind her. Turns.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Exactly. Turns and sees an image, like almost like a quick ghostly image sitting at the desk that disappears. And then she hears a voice call out her name. And then we see the ghost of Sarah at the desk. She stands up and starts coming towards Stella. And she says, I have another story just for you. We cut back to Ramon. The jangly man is still searching for him, but we see Ramon hiding under the same same table that Stella was hiding under. But the jangly man is like right on top of the table. And Ramon calls out to Stella. He says, "Stella, if you can hear me, wherever you are, tell the truth." And then we cut back to Stella and Sarah. And Stella tells Sarah, "No." She says, "It's time for you to hear a story. You were the victim. Now you've turned into a monster. The one that they said you were. You took my friends, two of the people that I love most." We cut back to Ramon. He tries to escape. The jangly man drops down on him, grabs him. We hear him scream. We cut back to Stella, and she says, "Are you going to take him too? What your family did to you, what they said, that's on them. But what you do, this is on you, Sarah. It's all on you. I'll tell your story, the real story. I'll tell the truth, but the rage has to stop." Then Sarah reaches out and gives her a quill pen and tells her to use her blood. So Stella starts, she pokes her finger and starts writing Sarah's story. She begs her to let her go. Sarah screeches like a banshee. The jangly man falls apart and disappears, leaving Ramon alone. Stella is now alone in the basement. And then we get the monologue over top where she says that stories hurt, stories heal. If we repeat them often enough, they become real. They have that power. They make us who we are. Then we cut to Stella and Ramon finding each other. They embrace. And the monologue continues. It says, "If there's anything I learned from Sarah, it's to never get up." We cut to Stella in her room writing. And she says, "I told Sarah's story exactly as I promised. I wrote about the pale, lonely girl who wrote stories in the dark and how she was turned into a monster by her family. Some people believed me. Most didn't. Because like Sarah, I was the lonely girl who knew how to tell a good, creepy story." And we see Stella kind of getting her books and stuff from school. Like, it looks like she's packing things up.
And she won an award for that story, too.
Right. It was like a first place.
Yeah.
Place award. And then we cut to Ramon getting on the bus, heading off to war. And Stella promises to write him every day and hands him a letter. He gets on the bus and goes. And then we see once again, it says, "Stories can teach us to care. They make us brave enough to admit that we need each other. Give us a home to go back to." Then we cut to Stella and her dad with Ruth driving along, like leaving the town. Stella's holding Sarah's book. And the narration says how she knows that Chuck and Augie are out there somewhere. And the secret is in the book. And she won't stop until she can find them. And then it cuts to the credits. Boom.
Sequel.
Oh, okay, I have a couple things, okay? So okay. This is actually, the whole Ramon thing, that's really depressing because he's probably going to die. So I really feel bad for him. So here's a couple things. We have, so Ruthie's out of psych. Mm-hmm. How did Ruthie's brother's friend and her father get her out of the psych hospital?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Why isn't she with her mom? Because her mom is still alive.
Exactly. Exactly. How do you explain the dead cop and the busted up cop car?
Plot.
Okay, I'll take it.
No, and these are those things in horror movies that we often have to question at the end. You know, people get away and it seems like, oh, it's a happy, you know, happy ending. But it's like there's all this wake of destruction. Like, you don't think the authorities would have something to say about this?
Right. Nope. Like you're
not in the 60s.
Your cop is dead.
Right. There we go. That's the reason. There's no one left to investigate. They're like, well, we got to wait until they ship us a new sheriff from the big city. And, you know, there was no
Sergeant Angel, back then. Sergeant Angle, Sergeant Nicholas Angle.
Oh, Lord. But yeah, so that was Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. I freaking love this movie. Like, I've seen it so many times since it's come out. It's just such a good movie.
This is only the second time I watched it, and I thoroughly enjoyed it still.
This is like the fifth or sixth time I've watched it. It's just, it's fun. Like, I love the effects. I love the look of the film. I love the actors. I can't get over the creature designs. I think they all look uniquely creepy.
Oh, yeah.
Like the big toe corpse is wonderful, and like in the fact that it just looks like a really good scary zombie. You know, the pale lady is that eerie kind of creepy where it's like you can't quite put your finger on why it's so scary. You know, it's like, because there's nothing outwardly terrifying about it. It's just really unsettling. Like all the proportions are off.
For me, it's the smiling mouth. It's just like you can tell that it wants to eat your soul by osmosis.
Exactly. And then, of course, the jangly man. Like, I love, there's little parts of him that I really like. Like, the fact that his face is it's put together, but his face is kind of split down the middle, almost like the bones aren't held together. Mm-hmm. And, like, you see, like, his jaw is slightly off center. There's just, the design is so well done. I really love the jangly man look. But speaking of the jangly man, under the trivia, the Troy James, it was all him with some CGI enhanced movements on the face. But as far as the walking backwards, the flipping sideways, all the different weird contortions that the jangly man did, that was all him. So that was not CGI.
That's impressive.
Yeah, it's and then this I just thought was kind of interesting that the musical theme, the name, the Hearst song, that's actually a title of one of the stories in one of the books. I think it was in mm-hmm. book two or three.
Yeah. Harold, I think, is in book three.
Yes. Yeah, he is. And then the only character that stayed true to the names of the characters in the story was Ruth. That's the everyone else. The Harold one, they said that the closest was Thomas. Yeah. And so, and then, of course, the climax of the film, this kind of fudges our rules a little bit. It started on Halloween. It didn't end on Halloween. The climax of the film is on November 5th of 1968. So, you know, it's also Guy Fawkes Day.
It's still a Halloween movie. Part of the movie is on Halloween.
Yep.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
And speaking of Halloween, we have just one left. We have the Rob Zombie's 31 coming up next week.
Ooh, I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. But, yeah, so our we should probably mention our social media and all our stuff. So if you guys aren't following us, we're the Boogeyman's Closet on Facebook and Instagram. Maurice is in charge of our Twitter, which is?
At Boogeyman's The.
Thank you, good sir. And I know I've been mentioning this, and I'm going to continue to mention it for the rest of the year, but we're having these huge giveaway contests on our social media. So if you're not following us, now is a great time to check it out because you can win free stuff. And for Halloween, we have two amazing prize packages with a lot of really cool stuff in it. This month, we had a ton of great things donated to us by the people over at Dead End Toys and Tees. If you guys aren't following them, definitely check them out on social media. They have tons of great horror merch. A lot of really cool original designs as well. So definitely worth your time. But yeah, I mean, do you guys have anything left that you want to mention about scary stories to tell in the dark?
Only that... This is actually kind of funny. So every time you were saying Ramon, I was thinking of the movie Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that movie?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So when she's like, oh, Ramon, you are Columbus. I am America. Discover me. To make it sound like they're having sex in the office. I don't know why that stuck in my head. But if you haven't seen this movie, see it. If you haven't read the books, get the books. I mean,
read it.
Yeah.
Read them.
Yeah, they're definitely worth your time. Like, yeah. Checking out the books. Because, like I said, I mean, I read the first one as a kid. I mean, I was young. I had to be like, I was still going to Sacred Heart. So it had to be before I was 12. I read the other two when I was a teenager. And then I reread all three just a few years ago. Jess found them. I want to say it was at a garage sale. Because I no longer had my childhood copies, but she found the set of three. And I mean, they were in pretty good condition. And so she surprised me with them. So I still have them in my collection now, but they're fun reads. Like, you know, even as an adult, they're just really fun reads. Would highly recommend it.
This book series is what made me want to watch Are You Afraid of the Dark on Nickelodeon? Because to me, it was just a televised version. Excuse me. Oh, my God. You gave me allergies remotely. No, my allergies have been acting up. But, like, Are You Afraid of the Dark really reminded me as a teenager of reading those books when I was a kid.
Right. Yeah. Oh, man. I really want to check out the new Are You Afraid of the Dark. Have you guys seen that?
No, I haven't watched it yet.
No.
I really want to check that out because I love...
I hear it's good.
Yeah, I've heard good things. The original, like, I remember there was only a few that really scared me, but it was just a fun TV show. Like, I watched it every week.
Oh, yeah. It was on SNICK. It was Clarissa Explains It All, Roundhouse, The Adventures mm-hmm. of Pete and Pete, and then Are You Afraid of the Dark at 9:30.
And then after that was Ren and Stimpy.
Yes.
Because I remember I used to finish, I would finish up my Nickelodeon watching with Ren and Stimpy, and then I would turn it over to HBO and watch Tales from the Crypt.
Yep. You know, all the simpler times.
Yeah, when that was my parents bowled every Saturday night. So, you know, it was like me, my brother, my sister were kind of left to our own devices. And I would just like watch a bunch of Nickelodeon stuff and then scare myself before bed and watch Tales from the Crypt.
Nice.
Yep. But alrighty, folks. Well, I think we'll probably wrap this up here. Like I said, we do have another Halloween movie, and we may have a surprise for everybody on Halloween night. So, you know, stay tuned. But as always, this is Mike saying goodbye.
See ya.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, follow us on Instagram at The Boogeyman's Closet, where you can stay up to date with everything we have planned.